being led by Troop 802. So everybody rise. Next on the agenda is roll call, and we'll have one council member gone today. And after that is citizen input. Citizen input is for any citizens in our community that would like to address the council on a subject that's council business that is not on the agenda tonight. If you'd raise your hand, and I'll acknowledge you, you can come to the mic and give us your name and address, and we allow up to 5 minutes. Okay, next on the agenda is the approval of the City Council minutes.
No.
Nope, I jumped on something. Didn't yeah. Oh, approval of agenda. Do I hear a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, second. Ken Johnson first, Ken Kaler second. Any discussion?
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed the same? Okay, thank you. Here. Should be on my computer where I should be.
Here.
Where are you at?
Consent. Consent agenda.
Okay. Do I hear a motion for the consent agenda?
I so move.
Okay. Mark Spohr first. I have a second.
Second.
Dan second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Against the same? Okay. We'll go to current business.
Okay. Janelle, President Janelle Anderson, she's at the chamber. Do you want to stand up here with me? Colonel Thomas Rochette, stand with your right, please.
Thank you.
Dowd, representing the President of the Pella Chamber of Commerce.
Actually, can we have you stay for just 2 more minutes?
Yeah, we will.
We're going to vote on something.
I just wanted to take a minute and publicly thank Air Force. I know our mayor got to, but I wanted to publicly thank Air Force. I want you to know I start every prayer with thanking God for our freedom and our safety. And having spent a little time outside of America, that gratitude is even deeper now. And so I wanted you to be able to see the participation that Air Force has had the last 2 years. This year, we were so honored to have your honor guard lead our parade. This year, we did something really fun at the beginning of our parade. We actually had the entire parade route do the Pledge of Allegiance before the parade. And then your honor guard, our honor guard.
It looks like it was about 10:24 in the morning.
Yeah, thank you. Very good. I think about 76 degrees. This is last year. Last year, we also had the honor guard. And we had a really neat thing last year. We actually did a saluting ceremony here in front of City Hall as a special way to thank our Vietnam veterans who really never got a welcome home parade. The next one, some more pictures. And I'm just going to end with part of the saluting ceremony that Air Force was involved in. And the reason I'm going to end on it is because I probably won't be able to speak after, because it was a very emotional, very, very emotional parade. And we had several Vietnam veterans come up to us in tears. And Korean War veterans. This year we focused on Korean War. Last year was Vietnam. And thank us for this. We also had a thank you. I almost forgot that. We had a flyover last year where we wrote thank you in the grass. And we had helicopters from Fairchild come into a flyover. And they took pictures. We had let them know ahead of time that we would be writing thank you with bodies in the grass. So, and my hope is still out there for my 2 dream flyovers that haven't got to happen. One would be our flag would be rappelled down, and the other one would be jets would do a flyover over our parade route to signal the beginning. So those are still on my hope.
All right,
list.
We'll call it in. I can for sure guarantee an ambulance driving by. I'm a medical commander. All right.
We can make it look really cool.
If you make it a flying ambulance.
I think we can make CNN that way. So with that, I'll let Stan cue our next one. This.
Silent movies.
Silent movies. Okay, we're getting silent movies. What I'm talking about here is that the mayor had just thanked our veterans. I'm going to make that a short bit silent here. And your boys, our boys, did an amazing job with a 3-rifle volley, which was just beautifully done. Honestly say there wasn't very many dry eyes in the crowd. And after that was finished, we will go through the whole thing. But we had a local citizen who played taps on the horn. And then we had a moment of silence for all our fallen soldiers. We really appreciate the Air Force's participation.
Do you have a minute? Can I tell you a little bit about that honor guard? You mean I know about these young men, or obviously they're coming on the honor guard too. They do this. That's not their main job. This is an extra training that they take, and they do it for about 6 months. And that's it. Then they go back to their job. So right here, you could have a medical technician who's normally riding the ambulance. You could have a maintenance enlisted troop who is fixing planes normally, or you could have a boom operator, the guy who refills the planes in the air and line this up. That's what their job is. But we consider it such an important part of our relationship with the community and honoring tradition and the heritage of the military. We make sure the honor guard is prepped and ready to go all the time. So we have a cadre of probably 20, 25 who are always there for ceremonies like this, for all the military ceremonies, like change commands and all that. They're always there. And of course, when our veterans or our war heroes have fallen and they're there for their funerals, they go all over. Fairchild Air Force Base represents everything from the mountains through the entire neck of Idaho, meaning Montana, down into northern Oregon. So when a funeral calls, they're in the bus, they're in the vans, and they take off and they go and perform those ceremonies. I'm including bugles a little bit. And that's their additional duty. Mm-hmm. So when you, next time, when they're here, amazing to think of. And some of these kids, a year ago, they were wondering if they were going to prom. And here they are. You know, here they are, 10,000, or not 10,000, 2,000 miles away from their home. And doing this for America. These, you know, somebody old like me, Colonel, I'm on my way down, you know. These are the young men and women who are going to lead into the next generation. And as you know, Tom Brokaw wrote a book about the greatest generation. And I imagine there's some World War II veterans right in here in this room. And that was the greatest generation we've ever seen in the history of our country for what they did. I think in 40 years, there'll be another one. It's the greatest generation, too. And we'll be talking about kids like this who are serving and trying to feed the tyranny that we're facing. Mostly, you know, from the Arab world, look all over that radical type of behavior so that we can have the sovereignty and the freedom that we know. So thank you very much. And can we come up here? We have something from Colonel Gimmer for you, and actually from the entire week. Now, do you know about these coins? Okay, you're going to have to hold her accountable here, okay? All right. Now, so sometimes coins are round. So we have to give them our gifts to you, but you got to know the story, okay? Then you have to make sure you always have this with you, because if you don't, there could be problems, okay? So this is Colonel Gimmer's personal coin, and it reflects the heritage of Fairchild Air Force Base. On the front says B, because we were the second squadron who were oldest, and our Fairchild was the B group, but Bane's favorite few. So go back to the history of Fairchild Air Force Base, a group of bombers that were here originally called Fame's Favorite Few. And Colonel Gimmer's goal, our mission first, I mean, our job is what? To support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. We have to make sure we're doing it. And as we're saying, perhaps right now we're doing it in Spain, like with Libya. We are in Iraq, we are in Afghanistan, we're all over in South America, and we're providing that homeland security that we do every day here, even secret stuff, right? When something goes off and somebody like is incoming, our planes go up and protect the skies above. Not to mention all the big homeland defense issues that we do. So we do that, then we're an unbeatable team. No one of us can do it by ourselves. Just like that precision timing, that honor guard, it is a team effort. And if you're not a team, it's going to be a bunch of individuals. You know, we're looking at Barney Fife out there. For some of you, you remember Barney Fife. For some of us, we'll have to explain Barney Fife. But you know how crazy that would be. We're all Barney Fife. But when you're a precision team, you can do just so much more. And then it's commitment to excellence. But again, what we want to do is make sure towns like a fellow can do what they're all about. And our job is to protect and make sure. And then on the back is a picture of the Fairchild logo. It's presented by the commander, our 92nd year refueling. Now, the importance of this is that you always have to have it with you. In World War II, that people would have their coins, so they were captured by the enemy, and in Germany in particular, and some of the nations, the countries where the Germans were invaded, and then Americans were trying to get back, they didn't know if this was a German masquerading as American or was it really American, so they didn't know. So they would pull out their coin, the Germans didn't have coins, but the Americans did. So they pulled out their coin and said, I am who I say, and I mean, here's my coin to prove it. And so they would do that. But when they got back home, someone got challenged and said, where's your coin? You put it on the table, and if you didn't have it, you were buying drinks. But you can do those too, not if you buy it around. But anyway, so that's where our song can be at in front of you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much. So now I'm going to come back up.
I'd like to award, just give this to Janelle. She's the president of the Pell Greater Chamber of Commerce. What it is the Chamber's been over our Independence Day events for quite a while now, and we've enjoyed those, and they've gotten better and better. You know, the parades have been awesome. You know, we enjoyed the days of the events and things we were going on, the basketball and the events in the park and things like that. And then, of course, the grand finale at the end of the day, about 10 o'clock, we all enjoy the fireworks. And I just, you know, I would, the council and the citizens, would like to thank the Chamber. Give us a recognition for all of our work that you've done. And thank you very much. Keep it up. You're doing great.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
Regress to Colonel for a minute. I had son that served 20 years at Fresh Out at station there right after University School, Master Sergeant, KC-135. The things that they do there, most of us don't understand. Citation that he has, I think it was Iraqi Freedom. They were there for like 60 days, 935 missions, got every one of them off on time. Never lost an airplane, never lost a person. Did everything on time, and that's the way those people operate. You have to be really appreciative of the things that they do. So congratulations, Colonel, on the Air Force and what they do for us.
Thank you again. Okay, we'll move on to 4.2, public hearing relevant to the closing of the CDBG project, well number 6. Okay, please bear with us as we progress through the legal and technical aspects of the public hearing. This public hearing is now open at 7:19 p.m. and is being held to receive a staff report and receive public comments to review final project performance on well number 6 rehabilitation project, funded by the Community Development Block Grant. This public hearing is required by law. I will now ask the staff to present their report. Larry?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. As the Mayor mentioned, the city received a grant from Community Development Block Grant in the amount of $312,000 for the rehabilitation of well number 6. This was also one of the American Recovery Act grants that CDBG funded a couple of years ago. Nothello was one of only a handful of communities around the entire state to receive the grant. As one of the requirements of the grant, we're holding this public hearing at the conclusion of the project to discuss with council and the public the project itself, give a brief update, history of the project, and then later on discuss where we go from here. The project budget was $312,000 for construction. The actual final dollar figure was slightly less than that, came in at $309,384.70, about $2,600 under the budgeted amount. The work was became about because of the high fluoride levels found in well number 6. The state Department of Health and the EPA has a trigger level of 4 milligrams per liter of fluoride in the drinking water where you have to do some sort of treatment or rehabilitation. Working with GSI hydrogeologists, the city chose to do the rehabilitation process. The project itself was started last year and was completed this late spring. The well, prior to doing any of the work, was about 1,200 feet in depth below ground surface, had a steel screen in the bottom of it that needed to be removed or filled in because of concerns of the Department of Ecology, commingling of waters. Also, it was thought that one of the higher fluoride-producing levels was found very deep in the well. There was a lot of concern whether the contractor could indeed remove the screen. We had discussions with the Department of Ecology about getting variances to leave the screen in place. They said they'd rather the contractor attempt to remove the screen before granting that variance. But to our pleasant surprise, the contractor was able to remove the screen without really damaging the well hole itself or the screen. Still amazing they were able to do that, because everyone was very concerned that the process would damage the well hole. After the screen was removed, we videotaped the well, found that there was rubble or debris in the bottom couple hundred feet, and it was decided at the time, after consultation with staff and council, to fill in the bottom of the hole so that there would be no concern from Department of Ecology on the commingling of waters in different aquifers. We also found by removing the screen that down around 1,000 to 1,100 feet was actually where the high fluoride producing zone was. Once that was plugged off with concrete, the contractor sampled the water, found that the fluoride levels had dropped to a little over 4 milligrams per liter. We'll discuss a little later on in the next presentation what do we do from here. The project itself is ready for acceptance, and after the public hearing we would recommend its acceptance by council.
Okay, thank you, Larry. I will now ask for public testimony. Questions or objections to be heard from citizens, please raise your hand so I may recognize you. After I acknowledge you, please come to the microphone and state your name and address for the record, and I will allow up to 5 minutes for each citizen. All right, go ahead.
Okay, I'm Brianna Alzola. I live at 380 South 8th Avenue. And my question is just what happens with the extra money
since you said it, you came in under
budget,
so I just want to know what happened with the extra money from the grant. It goes back to the Community Okay, I will now close the public hearing at 7:25 p.m. All right. Okay, do I hear a motion to accept the well number 6 project?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Gina first, Mark Snyder second. Any further questions or discussions that come to your mind? No? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, then that passes. Thank you. Okay, 4.3, discussion of well 6 status. Larry and Kevin.
Thank you again. That's Kevin, I'm Larry. We mentioned briefly a little history of the well project, where we were dollar-wise, where how we came in slightly under budget. One of the interesting aspects when the contractor obtained water samples, there is a whole series of tests they have to perform, not just for fluoride, but a number of other issues, one of which is to check for herbicides. And there was a hit on a herbicide called DCPA. And we did a little checking, Googled it actually. It doesn't stand for the Denver Center for Performing Arts, found that out, or the Dade County Pharmacy Association. We thought it might be the Dutchess County Pistol Association, but as it turns out, it's a general use pesticide. It's a herbicide used on annual grasses and certain annual broadleaf weed species in a wide range of vegetable crops. About one half of the use of the compound in the United States is for homes and gardens. We checked with Department of Health. Of course, we're concerned anytime there's a hit of any sort on any chemical in the system. They weren't too worried about it. In fact, the city had a hit in well 6 on this about 2008, almost double the amount that we saw now. We had about 20.21 micrograms per liter. The hit about 4 years ago, excuse me, was almost double that.
What is the MCL? Maximum contaminant level. The top there where we could be.
Mm-hmm. 0.1. And that's also the trigger for Department of Health.
0.1?
A microgram per liter. So we were over that, but they said the city just needs to continue annually monitoring, grabbing samples for it like they have been doing. It's surprising there hasn't been a hit on it in a couple of years, but it's also possible that because during construction over the winter and spring, the well head, the motor and casing was stored outside the well 6 pump house. It's possible that someone could have been spraying. It could be an abnormal hit, but because there was one a few years ago, it might just be a reoccurring issue. Department of Health, again, said just do some monitoring, keep track of it. They weren't too concerned as far as doing any sort of investigations at this time, but we wanted to bring it to council's attention that there was the slight abnormality. Everything else, all the water samples came back very good. The fluorides were down about 4.3, which is a little different than the sample the city took here a few weeks ago. But we think, in talking to Kevin, the big difference is the amount of flushing that occurred before the samples were taken. When all of the water quality samples were taken this spring, they'd just done their 24-hour test, you know, flushing, pumping the whole well for 24 hours straight. When the staff did theirs, they flushed it for about 4 hours. And it could be that that's the reason why the fluoride level just recently came back a little over 5. Kevin has a presentation on a little bit of the history of the well, how we got to, or where we started and how we got to this point. A few PowerPoint slides.
Thank you, Larry.
Okay, no poster boards tonight. I've sworn those off. I'm using technology for it. So what I want to do just in a few minutes is just kind of go over the history of where this well went, what we've done, where we are today. This first slide, just a side-by-side, very simple, not-to-scale graphic summarizing basic well construction conditions and prior to the rebuild this spring. On the left, the pre-rebuild based on all the work that was done several years ago. A shallow casing, a big open interval, and then at the bottom of that slide you can see the liner screen. That was the pipe assembly, the liner and screen assembly in the bottom of the hole, which once the start card was issued to work on this well by WAC 173-160, the attempt had to be made to pull that liner to bring the hole back into compliance with the WAC. If we had never touched the well, that would have been grandfathered and left alone. But having to go into the well, that's where ecology came back with the determination that an attempt had to be made to pull it down, to come into compliance with WAC 173-160, and the attempt was made, resulting in the post-rebuild simple configuration on the graphic on the right. My right, I guess it's everybody's right. We're all looking at it the same way. The post-rebuild, March 2011, based on the video after all the rebuild was done, basically, most of the liner assembly was removed successfully, and most of the bottom of the well was plugged off, and giving you basically a 212-foot sealed casing, about 200 feet of open hole, and then the sealed bottom. So go to the next one. So with all that, with the work that was going on, August 2008, composite sampling at the surface, 4.6, 4.7, 4.8 was the fluoride milligram per liter concentrations a couple of years ago. The screen was successfully pulled right before Christmas. And with that successful removal of the screen and liner, we ran into something we weren't really anticipating, which we saw in the video December 28, 2010. We found water production in that well behind more than just the screens that were in there. We found evidence for water production scattered all over the place in that well behind probably the entire or the vast majority of the liner and screen assembly. Found it up to about 1,002 feet below ground surface. That was not what we were thinking we were going to see based on everything we knew at that point. But once all that pipe was out of the ground, we could see what was going on. Down to 1,005, 1,006 feet, which had all collapsed in on us after the removal of that pipe and liner assembly. So with the removal of that pipe and liner assembly, looking at the video, looking up where we think water production was in that well, looking at the fact that the lower almost 200 feet of the well had already collapsed in on us as that assembly was pulled out, and looking at water quality we were collecting at the time, if you all recall, we originally were talking about doing sealing job higher in the hole at about 900 to 950 feet below ground surface. As all this work was going on, as we were seeing the conditions we weren't expecting to see, as the bottom of the hole was collapsing in, we just revised that plan slightly and went for the two bullets there, basically eliminating any potential Grand Ron Wanapum commingling. Very important from ecology's point of view, they don't like commingling outward. And that contact is somewhere down at 1,100 feet, so we figured we better seal that off, none of the liner and screen were out. And based on the water quality work we were trying to do in the field at the time, we looked at targeting, just sealing off that bottom, the bottom of the well at about 1,000 feet. So we went from a seal higher in the hole to a seal lower in the hole based on the successful removal of the liner and screen assembly and based on what we were seeing going on. So that was completed, sealing job was completed mid-February. We then went back in and started the final round of pump testing and a water quality analysis, and that revealed some interesting attributes in this well. Early on, the step drawdown test, there's a two-phase test we ran, a step drawdown which ran for about 8 hours, just pumping it at increasingly higher rates over the course of that 8 hours. Followed a day later by a 24-hour constant rate test. During the step test, early in that step test, I'm not sure, I have to go back and look at the notes. During that step test, we had a 5.1 milligram per liter fluoride measurement. So on day one, somewhere during that 8 hours, we had 5.1. By the end of the 24-hour constant rate test, which we ran at 2,000 gallons a minute, fluoride concentrations were down to 4.37. So what we think was going on, we gotta remember another interesting thing about this well had a thief zone in it. There was water moving up hole from high concentration fluoride, moving up the hole and out into the geologic formations, out in the higher aquifers in the 800 to 880 depth range. With the removal of that, most of that uphole flow with the plug at the bottom, we were wondering, okay, this well was built in 1972 or 3 or 4. That uphole flow had been occurring the entire time. So approximately 40 years of water, high fluoride water, moving up the hole and out into the formation. Well, when a pump is on, it's pulling water back in. So one of the things we were wondering about, okay, we've turned off most of the uphole flow, but we've got 40-odd years of fluoride-rich water out in the immediately surrounding hydrologic environment. What's going to happen? Early in the pump test, 5.1. Late in the pump test, 4.3. Are we developing out some of that old water that got out in the formation? Now we're sucking it back and getting it out of the hole. And while we're doing that, we're also pulling in the shallower, cleaner water, the less than 4 milligram water, which can now take over more of the production, more of the chemistry of the hole, because that deep stuff, again, was very bad water quality and very high production. This used to be a 3,000 plus gallon a minute hole. It's now a 2,000 gallon a minute hole. That loss of 1,000 gallons is mostly this high fluoride 5 plus milligram per liter water, meaning the remaining water can now be a more dominant mass balance in the chemistry, thus bringing the fluorides down. What we now wonder about with this plug in the bottom is actually about 1,006 feet down. We go to the last slide. We now are wondering about some recommendations for the future on this hole is, can this well be operated in what I made a comment to Larry the other day, in a sweet spot? Maybe it doesn't run at 2,000 gallons a minute all the time. Maybe we run it at 1,000 gallons a minute or something, where most of the water production is shallow water. Shallow water is low fluoride water. Where is that? Can we run it at a production rate for general everyday use that keeps fluoride down? Because as we ramp up production in this well, decrease the dynamic head in that well, that high pressure water down below, does it start pushing itself back into the well? And where is that? And so our recommendation for y'all to think about down the way in the future, maybe experiment with this hole with the existing pump, existing controls, and try to find out if you can run it, minimizing fluoride production for standard, whatever that is, operation. And then if you have to spike it because of fire control or other things, you still have that backup, you still have that capability, because you can run this thing up to 2,000 or a little bit higher gallons per minute. But when you do that, fluorides will go up. There's other things you can do in the distribution system, which is a hydrogeologist I'm not going to talk about. Larry can talk about that. But just at the well itself, there is some interesting observations that we've seen to date that the thing might be able to run at a lower pump rate for sustained operation where the water is going to be below, closer to or even below 4. That's where the thing is today. That's what the well looks like today. I think that's all I have to say. I don't think there's another slide. Is that number 6? Oh, back to this then. That's just, there's where you're at. That's the first slide. It's also the last slide. Those are the conditions we have right now. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Kevin.
Real briefly to finish that up, we strive for a balancing act. We didn't want to decrease the amount of flow any more than was necessary, but we also realized we needed to reduce the amount of fluorides. And as Kevin said, there'll be some tweaking that Public Works will be looking into, working on as we go forward. As some of you may recall, Department of Health still looks at well 6 as a standby or a backup well because of the fluoride levels. We want to work with staff to discuss with them what Kevin's recommended, to see if we can produce maybe 1,000 or 1,500 gallons a minute, see what that does to fluoride levels. In discussions with Department of Health, the way to get their viewing of this well from a standby well to a permanent well is to do what they call have a consistently and reliably fluoride level below the MCL of 4. That being said, Health and the EPA are also talking about changing that trigger level. I think we mentioned at one time they're looking at a broad brushstroke of lowering that level to between 1 and 2 milligrams per liter. If that's the case, there's a lot of communities around the state that are going to be scrambling because their natural fluoride level is greater than 1 or 2, but less than 4. Numbers that we've seen in other wells here, less than 4, but greater than 1 or 2. And with that, one of the other comments that Department of Health has made, they would be in favor of the city. We wanted to commingle water that comes out of the well before it hits the first meter service to see if that would reduce the fluoride level as well. So there are a few options to look at. They'd like to have a report of some sort if the city wants to produce or go down that pathway as far as what exactly the city has in mind. At this point, I think we'd recommend doing a little experimenting with the well to see, like Kevin says, where the sweet spot is, see if that can keep the water or the fluoride levels down and the water levels up. And worst case scenario, if we need to, look at the commingling of water to keep that down. In discussions with Public Works, they of course would like to see the maximum amount of water available at any given time due to fire flow, summertime demands on the system, industrial demands on the system. So I think looking into what a good balance would be a prudent move. And with that, if you have any questions, Kevin and I would be happy to take them.
Do we have any citizens with questions? Council members? Ken?
I don't know how to move on this. For one thing, I thought we had all ancient water around the area. Now we've got herbicides all the time. I had to bring that on that point.
That was my question.
The other question is, do we feel that we've got a seal in that bottom as far as that lower water coming out of
it? I suspect, yeah. I mean, it's in there. It's, I don't know. It's just, the cement grout plug appeared in the video appears to be there. So it's sealed to it's the 1006.
Well, I guess my other question then is a possibility we may be back to where we were talking about a year ago of a mixing tank or something to mix this with our other waters before we put it out into the main flow.
And that's a possibility to look at also. One of Ken's comments there as far as the plug in the bottom of the hole, when staff, Public Works, took their sample about a week and a half ago, the testing lab indicated that part of the samples were cloudy, turbid. We talked to Department of Health, we talked to Kevin, what could be causing that. And we did a lot of brainstorming, different ideas. You know, it could just be because it wasn't flushed for very long. It had sat for a while before doing any flushing. We even looked at, you know, what's the worst case scenario? Could the plug have failed? Of course, the only way to find that out is to pull the well, everything, and re-video it. But like Kevin says, we don't think that's happened. I think if we took another sample and flushed for a good considerable amount of time, we'd probably see that that cloudiness has gone away. Could also be that there was something at the lab that happened that caused that. It's been known to happen before. But we don't think that in this case it's because the seal has failed.
With all the rubble that was in it, how much cap do you think you put above that rubble with concrete or whatever you filled it with? I'm sure you filled it with grout. I imagine that's how you did it. So I'm just curious on what that depth was.
I don't have the well log the contractor produced, but I'd say a good 10 or 12 feet.
Is that above or the top of that screen that was in there originally?
Yeah. There's also, we're kicking around this contractor. Well, we weren't kicking the contractor around, but kicking around the ideas. I think workmanship-wise, they were, I thought, fairly good. The fact they were able to get that screen out of there at all surprised the heck out of all of us. Paperwork-wise, they were average. But I'd say that about most contractors we deal with. They just don't do paperwork very well. One of the reasons why it took so long to get to completion point, we didn't want to recommend accepting the project until we had the final piece of paperwork, which was a well report that the contractor has to file with Department of Ecology. If they didn't do that, then I think it would have been very difficult to get it from them, just because they're kind of slow when it comes to paperwork. But we held the hammer over their head that we're not going to recommend acceptance until we get it. They did that about a week or so ago, hence we're able to come before you for acceptance. If we had the opportunity to work with them again, I think we'd welcome it, whether it be on a rehabilitation project or even a new construction. But we'd go into it expecting them to do better with the paperwork.
When I came to the meeting tonight, as a business owner, I was looking at it that if it was my business and I put that many much resource into that well, I'd want to run it. And I agree with what Kevin's theory. I don't agree with all of them, that we've been pushing fluoride water up and out, and now it's coming back in. And the only way to get rid of that is to run it. And we can go a 24-hour clean out, but then we need to run it for like 24 days. And to me, you have a plant out there that's running using 2.5 million gallons every 24 hours. You got people watering the yard. Now's the time to flip the switch and get us going 1,000 gallons a minute and see what happens after a month.
We agree.
That's a really good idea. We had talked about that the other day, is because of development, if you need to develop it out, the way to develop is to pump like crazy for a long time.
Will Department of Health let us do that at this point?
Yes, especially since it's summertime, and we can say that because of the demand on the system, we need to use it, because, well, one, we don't want to tax the other wells to the point
right.
where we have problems with them. But that's also, like Kevin says, the perfect way to find out.
If you could kick it in now, I'd pump it the rest of the summer at 2,000 gallons a minute.
Can we throttle down to 1,000 gallons a minute with a 600 horsepower pump on there? I say we do that. I mean, I think you're diluting that fluoride so much with the plant using that much water. I don't know, maybe we offer McCain's a discount and have them use some too to further dilute it, but no, I withdraw that. But that's my intuitive feeling, is run that thing and let's see a month down, and now's the time, and a month down the road, what we got. Because what you people presented tonight is I saw on August 2008, the fluoride levels are 4.63 to 4.78, and now they're 4.3 to 5.0. So I don't know, you could make the sarcastic comment that we haven't gained a thing.
That's a very valid point. Unfortunately, with well water, and I'm sure Captain will vouch for this, a lot of it is,
And we knew that from the beginning. You were up front with us on that. I agree with that. Uh-huh. But I like the theory that we've been forcing fluoride out, and now it's coming back in, and let's run it and see. I mean, maybe if you run it for 30 days, it'll be down to 2 or something at the most optimistic situation.
If you decide to go down that road, I'd recommend you sample fluoride once a week.
But do you sample that at the well or at my kitchen faucet where it's commingled?
Their criteria to change this from standby to a full-time permanent well, they'll want to see daily testing. But there's equipment the city can take that and test and analyze.
Yes.
You don't have to go to the lab. They still want an accredited lab to sample it once a month.
We have the equipment to sample daily, but then we could take a weekly sample to send to the lab.
Yeah. I mean, the downside would be after 30 days, if it's at my faucet, it's 4.0 or above, and now we think that well number 6. The other issue with well 6 was a warm sulfur odor. Is that coming into play, or is that behind us now?
We have not seen or heard anyone mention anything with any of the testing. I don't know what the temperature is, but there doesn't seem to be any sulfur odor to it. Terry, has Dan mentioned anything about that?
We had a little bit of it when we first went to
So it's a good possibility that was at one of the lower levels too that got plugged off with the screen removal and the concrete plug at the bottom.
With at our church, we have a small hot water heater, and we only use it once a week because that's when we go to church, and we get a very sulfur smell out of that. Is that related to water? Is that a personal issue at the church? Have you heard of that before? I'm a real rotten egg odor of hot water.
Not heard of personal issues at the church, but it could be because the water is sitting and getting stagnant.
So does that mean there's that odor is dominant in the water, or is it just inherent with water that if it sits and heated, it starts getting a sulfur, rotten egg odor smell?
Well, chemistry of water, I mean, it's not, you're not gonna get H2S in the water. There's not the chemistry to drive it, but how old is the water heater? I don't know.
Okay.
I would be insane to speculate for your H2S out of your water.
So I can't blame the water on that, really.
Not
that.
Okay. Have someone flush it for a while before service on Sunday and see if that makes a difference.
Okay. I didn't want to get free advice. I just wondered if that was okay. I guess I'm done. I'm like I stated again. Run it. That's my opinion. The way this is the optimal time. Everybody's watering their yard and the plant's running, as far as I know.
If we do run it for 30 days, for the full 30 days, I would like to see it tested every day and then once a week go to the accredited lab. I think you're going to have better tracking of the results.
What is the test, Gina? Is it like...
It's just a fluoride test. We use what's called a spectrophotometer down at the lab, mm-hmm. and they have little AccuVac ampules, and you can just break them right in the water, and it sucks the water in, and you let it develop, the color develop for so many minutes, and you put it in the spectrophotometer, and it gives you a reading. And it's a very easy test, but... And then I would send it to the accredited lab, because I don't believe we're... accredited in fluorides. We're accredited in a lot of our wastewater.
It's fairly cheap to test.
Okay, any other council comments, questions? Okay, let's go to...
Comment on the turbidity. It kind of talked about salt burn and cloudiness and warmness. The turbidity came back. It's very, very good.
No, I said I wanted lab to see had us mentioned test it daily
when
and then have it go
Public
to
Works took their sample here a week or so ago. There was a little turbidity or cloudiness to the water. We think there's a good possibility that was because the water had not been, or the well had not been on for a while, just needed a little more flushing before they had taken the sample. Again, taking samples like Gina's talking about after it's been running, that should resolve that right away. On behalf of GSI, we'd like to thank you for the project. I think it turned out very well. We were, I think, very fortunate to get the recovery funds from the state and put it to good use, and also came in slightly under budget. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Larry. 4.4, resolution accepting Public Works Trust Fund loan, SR24 infrastructure. Larry?
Thank you again. Some of you may recall a couple of years ago, the city received a Public Works Trust Fund loan for what was called the pre-construction or the design and planning for the infrastructure improvements in and around the SR24 Industrial Park area. Basically both east and west of SR24, south of SR26. Project is complete. The state is holding back about $142,000 of funds. The $142,500, the final draw, and they would like a resolution from the city accepting the project as complete so that we can get that final $142,500 for the city.
Any questions? Go ahead, Mark.
I don't know if it's my fault or communication snafu, but I've never seen the plans. So I feel like I'm banning a book before I read it because I'm accepting this and I have no idea what I'm accepting.
We've reviewed plans with staff, plans and specifications with Public Works a couple, three times. We have a final set ready for them for a review at their convenience. Be happy to get anything that you'd like for your review as well.
And this whole amount just went to engineering, is that correct?
Yes.
I'm not real comfortable with it. It's proving something I've never seen. I'm just saying.
So does the council want to meet at the same time as the Public Works to view these?
And they hand them to me?
Sure. You need them explained to you or not? You know how to read them and all that?
I don't know. I haven't seen them.
Questions and stuff? Eamon, you got a thought?
Perhaps if we took the time, we could have them spread out in room three, say a morning or an afternoon, and make it convenient for any council member to drop by, and we'll do a brief explanation of them.
Is there a time for people, morning or evening, what's best for council?
I think we should at least look at it, see what we're buying here.
Okay, so like 8 o'clock in the morning, is that best for everybody? Okay, how about...
We have perhaps a finance meeting coming up on Thursday. If the council wanted to set that time, maybe that would be a good day to set this up.
Thursday, 8 o'clock, for those that want to come in and see it? That sound good?
Between 8 and noon?
It'd be available all morning, too, yeah.
And who's, can like Daryl explain it to us if we have questions, or?
Between the three of us, Terry, Daryl, and I think we can. Okay. And then, of course, Larry would be available by phone.
Oh.
Okay. This Thursday, then, no sitter.
I've got a question on it, too. The Public Works Trust Fund on that particular, we had a different interest rate set depending on progress of the work being done. I guess it was a higher rate for the longer we take to start the project, my understanding. Since we got our grant for the Moon Street project, this is actually part of that phase. Does that help in that Public Works Trust Fund to lower the interest rate on that by starting that?
We had 5 years to start construction after the engineering planning was done, which the initial grant or loan was for. The interest rate will go up to 5%. If we do not start construction, which is the key word, within that 5 years. The second part of your question is the Moon Street project. It's not part of the other project, but it gives us a springboard to get the other project done. Really two separate projects, but it's leading us to the SR24 project.
Where's the clock at on that 5 years?
I think we're year two, a little over two.
And it isn't necessarily interest rate, it's actually payback time. We have to pay this loan back currently in 5 years. And if we start construction in that window of time, then it is extended to 20-year payback. So, for instance, this year we're going to have to pay $115,000 in debt service on that. But if we start construction, then it extends it out to 20 years of payback. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Are you still actively working on funds for us? Because this is about a $6 million project.
With the CDBG grant that as long as we get that started within that time period, Public Works Trust Fund looks at that as a portion of the project being started. So if the city wants to, we can extend that 5 years to 20 years for the payback.
But for the project, I think especially the project itself, you're still exploring grants?
Looking at everything that's out there. Feds have come out with another program called Tiger, which is similar to the American Recovery Act. We've applied to that before, but DOT took all the money. We'd like to apply again to see what our chances are on that. It fits pretty well.
We'll write your report on this. And obviously, there's some confusion. I thought there was two separate projects. That's what I was led to believe. So we'll send you a clarification on that.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, 4.5, monthly investment report. Mike?
Let's see. I need my stuff up here.
We decided to present
council with a report on our investments on a monthly basis. So this is just kind of a start on that. And we'll kind of smooth it out as we go along. The picture I wanted to give you is the difference in the two portfolios. The top one is the LGIP, which is the local government investment pool. As you can see, our June interest rate was 0.1583. Now that's the annual rate of interest. It's almost kind of laughable. We had during the time when we had after we got the bond issue from the Main Street project, we had over $3.5 million in the state pool, and we were making $687 in interest earnings in a month. And a few years ago, if at 5% interest, that number would have been like $14,000 in 1 month. So that's kind of what interest rates do to you. And then if you look down below, the Bank of America, it's actually U.S. Trust is a subsidiary of Bank of America. It shows our interest earnings for the same period of time. And as you can see, it's about $75,000 difference. And of course, the interest earned, their earnings are a lot higher. We're going to have Terry Meyer from Portland come in at our next council meeting, and she's going to go over the portfolio and talk about what the future looks like and where they are. But I personally feel like they have done an incredible job of managing our portfolio to bring a return on it like they have. I think in February we had a negative return of $86, which was kind of like zero earnings for the month, but that was the only month where we really impacted. So it's been in the positive all through this economic time. Part of that, of course, is that some of the products that we have in that portfolio have the time frame for them is out further. And so they just keep earning based on what we, bought them for. But anyway, I think it'll be interesting to hear Terry Meyer in 2 weeks. And she seems to be a very sharp person, and I think we'll enjoy her. And then I'll just refine this as time goes along, if I need to do some things to it. One of the reasons for this, too, I think I told council some time ago that I was called in one time to do an audit for a city that felt like somebody had stolen $1 million from them, and so I came in there and I spent about 6 days, and I found out that nobody stole the money, but somebody gave them a checkbook and told them they had this much money, and they didn't have that much money. So they were simply spending money they didn't have. And what that happened in the budget process, and it happened 2 years in a row. And I don't know what was going on. The finance director didn't understand what, I don't know what it was, okay? But the first year, the finance director said, our beginning fund balance for the new year is gonna be such and such. Well, they didn't have that money. It was overstated by $500,000. And then the second year, they had another finance director had replaced the first one. He did exactly the same thing. Overstated it by $500,000. So they basically had spent $1 million they didn't have. And the general fund was in the hole by about $850,000. So what I want to do is I want to keep you fully apprised of where everything is. You know, I give you a monthly report that pretty much gives you an idea of where we are. Well, it does give you an idea, an exact idea where we are cash-wise and so on. And so my challenge to you is when we get in the budget process that you look me in the eye and say, where's the money for that? Okay? I work very, very hard on our ending fund balance for the current year to make it as accurate as possible so that the checkbook you get for next year with a beginning fund balance is as close to the reality as we can get it.
Now, of course, we do this in advance, 3 or 4 months in advance, so a lot of it is estimates, but we do get pretty close. Because I feel like if we get within $50,000 to $100,000, that's called close in what we're doing, you know. But so you never, I don't ever want you to be led down this rosy path that we have all this money when in fact we don't have it. So I'll just give you more and more information, and that's kind of what this is about as well. Are there any questions about this?
Go ahead.
On the surface, it appears we need to move more money to the Bank of America investment portfolio. Is there regulations restricting us from doing that?
No. Mark, you and I think exactly the same way. I told Eamon, I said, I know what the first question is going to be. And that, when you look at it, that is the first, you think, well, why don't we? And that's it is an excellent question. And we could balance it out a little bit more. But the state pool is liquid. It's like cash.
Yeah.
And I can move money in and out of there as freely as I want. I can call at 10 o'clock in the morning, before 10 o'clock in the morning, and have it in our account that same day. And usually when I have an excess in a fund, I'll move it in a day, I'll move it in there. The Bank of America portfolio is totally different. If I needed a whole bunch of cash and had to cash stuff out, some of it could be cashed out at a loss. And so this is a way to save all of that. We have times, for instance, twice a year, our property tax comes in real, real heavy. And in between that, it doesn't come in very heavy. It comes in pretty light. So we could have a cash flow problem from the next time the property taxes come in. So we can go to the state pool and we can get money and put it into our checking account easily. But that was an excellent question.
Kind of like a savings account versus a CD then.
That's it, exactly.
The other thing, I guess you're using, on the surface, it appears we've spent, by the balance in the local government investment pool, we've spent $800,000 more dollars than we've taken in, because that balance has been reduced.
Yes, and that was because of the Main Street project.
Yeah,
we had a lot of money in there for that,
and drew
it down.
Okay,
so I'll try to refine this. If you come up with any ideas, I would love to hear them. And thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, 4.6, change of speed limit on South 14th Avenue, Lieutenant Dave Inks.
We're asking.
Oh, Assistant Chief, sorry about that.
You would name whatever rank there is over there. Today, yep. We're bringing you information. We're asking that you change speed limits on South 14th between Ash Street and SR 26. Currently, right by the water tower where the walking path is, the speed limit is 40 miles an hour going southbound. Northbound is 25 currently, which continues up past Ash Street, which is currently 25. During school, the northbound lane, about 2 telephone poles up northbound from SR 26, reduces down to 20 miles an hour. However, because of school, the southbound lane stays at 40 miles an hour. That's been 40 miles an hour since I've been here, and I won't tell you how long that is. But it needs to be changed. The one critical thing is Gemstone has now hooked on to 14, and I'm not sure when that becomes active, but that is going to be an access road on the 14. I really can't see 40 mile an hour cars traveling southbound on 14th with traffic coming onto that. There could be additionally 2 other roads that would hook on that side, come on to 14th eventually. And if the new school that is proposed is built, which is on the other side of the street, south of Scutney Springs, we're going to have even more congestion. And so what we're asking is that just is brought into that 25 miles an hour from SR 26 north and south. And then during school, virtually, that school's put in during the school year, that would virtually drop to 20 because almost all that would be school zone. I see here a $300 budget. I assume that has to do with maybe Public Works putting signs up, over, you know, new speed limit signs and posting additional signs. Our recommendation for your consideration is that, like I said, that you drop it down to 25 for both north and south, from basically from SR 26 north.
Any questions?
I've always wondered why you have one side one limit and one side the other limit. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
We have several streets that way, and it's because it used to be county. We do not, the city that I know of does not allow anything over 35 miles an hour. That was county street up until recently. So for a lot of years, both north and south of the water tower was county. And so that's why you see 40 mile an hour. Now we did drop it coming in, but that was never addressed to drop the 40 down to 25.
I have to admit, I mean, it is painful. You still feel like you're out in the country there and slowing down to 25 and coming into town. But as we add schools and new streets come on board, I mean, I think it's something we're going to have to do.
I believe you're totally right. If you look at what construction is going on now, there's going to be houses along that very shortly.
Yeah.
And if there's the other developments, there won't be just those bare fields on it. It will be just like any other residential street.
When a school comes in, there's going to be a lot more.
Yeah.
And right now, we have traffic congestion there now, currently, with Scootney Springs.
But I agree with Mark. I mean, you come off the highway at 60, and you've been there, and it says 25 miles an hour. Yeah, but you just have to bear the pain.
And I can tell you, because I've had officers out there working traffic recently, is most cars coming into town are traveling between 40 and 50 miles an hour when they're in the 25 zone, coming off the highway. And so if we maybe can stop them out there, then we can get them slowed down by the time they get in.
Is that mean you'll pick up the $300 then?
What's that?
So you'll pick up the $300?
Yeah. Now Terry's going to take it out of his paycheck.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you, Assistant Chief. We won't have a vote tonight on that. It'll be brought back to us. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, 4.7, committee reports. Do we have any committee meetings recently?
We've got an ACDC meeting that will be this Thursday in Ritzville.
Okay. Anything else coming at us?
I got one. Call. Go ahead. We had a left board meeting last week, and I'm not going to bring up anything tonight, but I would like to bring something up back to our workshop. I'd like the council aware of what's going on and some of the problems we've got with the left board and money wise. So I'd just like to bring that up at the workshop.
Sure. We'll put her on. Sounds good.
Yeah, and it might be that was a subject I had also, because looking at warrants, we paid over $20,000 in medical costs for LEP, and that.
One quarter.
Yeah, and so we need to get in front of that. So that's an excellent topic. And we might prepare some figures for that too, what it's costing us. Because obviously as these LEP people age, their medical costs go up, and we're either buy insurance for them or get in front of it somehow, because it could, and I think it has bankrupt.
Other city.
Yeah.
We have insurance, Mark, for all one, and that's the issue you're talking about. And the council member Kater wants to bring back to the council is to discuss why and how this is happening and where it's moving to. But you're exactly right in picking it out of the budget. But we'll go through it in the workshop.
Okay.
Any other committee reports? Okay, unfinished business.
I brought this up last meeting, and while Mr. Julius is here, regarding these signals at Main and 11th, and we got a memo back that says they just put it back the way they found it. And I guess me and my wife have the same dispute. When I find a bump in the bumper, I say, she says, that's always been there. And I said, well, I think I would have noticed that. To me, those street lights lined up before. Nobody said anything about those signal lights not being lined up, but now they're not. But it's your contention they've always been like that? Does anybody have a recollection that were they always?
They were always off. All you had to do is look at the ones that were exactly the same as the ones at Main and 7th. And you, if you looked at those before they took them down, they were over on one lane.
Is there obviously money, but it is a potential there to move them, center them in the lanes? Because now that I'm aware, it just looks goofy to me.
They can be moved. Looking back at the old notes, when it was first brought up to council, the reason we believe they were left where they were is because the arms were long enough that if you did want to move the heads, you could. The other signals, they weren't long enough and they had to be replaced.
Right.
Okay. So does the council want to get a cost to be brought back to us to get those to move?
I do, but okay. Nothing urgent. I mean, if we put it in next year's budget, that's fine with me. It's just kind of a continuous improvement thing. If it's,
we might be able to save a little bit of money.
$50,000, forget it. But
we might be able to save a little bit of money since they're here on 14th all the time.
Yeah. So don't get me started.
But, Tim.
Yes.
While we're talking about traffic lights, did we get that one corrected back on Main Street and Broadway? I know that. Caution light was pretty short, and I've had some comments about it being shortened again after they redid that whole lighting system, and that needs to be extended, especially on Broadway. But trucks are having a hard time when they see that caution light, that to break in time to get to Main Street without going through it. And I made that comment before, and I didn't know whether it got corrected or not. I know we did.
You talked to me last week about it, and no, it hasn't been put in the loop. It's on the nose.
Some of that is those trucks doing 40 miles an hour trying to
beat them. They do.
I see it out there all the time.
Actually, I'd like to address that. I drive up and down that street, and I purposely go the speed limit with my rig so that, because what it helps me do is it helps me time everything, because I'm hauling somewhere between 75 and 105,000 pounds rolling forward. And me and Isaac Newton are real good friends. So having that extra second on that yellow light, it's not going to just help me, but it's going to help all of it. And yeah, and you're right. Spud season, I can't take anything from you on that. That's crazy time. But we'll do everybody a favor having an extra second and a half for reaction time. Because those air brakes, they're not disc brakes on a little car. It takes a little bit of effort to bring this stuff. So thanks.
Thanks, Sean.
We're looking good.
Thank you, Larry. Any other unfinished business?
Eamon, did we get a clock up at the pool?
And a temperature.
Okay. Good.
Temperature one is up under the eaves, though, but I'm thinking about getting moved because it reflects, it's shaded all the time.
Yeah.
But it does get reflection from the concrete. It was 101 there the other day when I looked at it. And the clock down here is at 98.
Is there a separate thermometer portion of it that could be set somewhere where it was non-indirect sun? Yeah.
Okay, new business. We have any new business? Okay, mayor's announcements. We need a quick finance audit committee meeting to resolve an investment question Thursday. I guess everybody heard that. July 14th, either at 9 or 2. Ken, Mark, and Gina, is that going to work? And what hour do you want to do it? At 9 o'clock?
I would say 9 if we're going to have the plans available between 8 and noon.
Yeah, if it's short.
Okay, so Mark can be there. Gina, you can make it?
Yeah, I can be there.
And Ken, you?
I won't be in town.
Okay. Ken, do we have an alternate on that?
We'll take a half hour.
Okay. Do we have an alternate on that one?
Yeah, I think it's Mark's side.
Are you the alternate, Mark? Okay.
I'm not sure. We'll check that.
Okay, then Wednesday, July 27th is the date set for the city-county review of the prosecutor agreement. The meeting would be held at the Adams County Service Building here in Othello at 1 p.m. Mark Snyder the mayor, police chief, and administrator. Everybody know about that? You're aware of that, Mark? Okay. Okay, the city's Relay for Life team is having a spoon taco feed outside in front of City Hall on Friday, July 15th from noon to 2 p.m. All proceeds go to the American Cancer Society Relay for Life. Please stop by and have lunch this Friday. So all of you, if you can make that, be great. Support a worthy cause. Othello's Relay event is Friday, July 22nd to Saturday morning, July 23rd at the Othello High School football field. If you would like to sign up to walk 1 hour for the city's relay team, please see Debbie. She has a walking schedule. Hope to see everyone there. And if you don't know Debbie, she's sitting right down there next to Mike. Smile, Debbie. There you go. Okay, and also All City Classic Car Show is this weekend. Slow drags are on South First Avenue starting at 7 p.m. Friday. The car show is all day on Saturday in Kiwanis Park. Did I miss any announcements? Oh, this Wednesday is the mayor's luncheon also at 12 o'clock at the Senior Center, if you're interested in coming to that. Any other announcements I might have missed? Okay, this meeting's adjourned. Thank you for coming, everybody. That's it. Okay. What's this?